That'd keep you busy during the watermelon season. How'd you grow them yourself, Mr. Lawrence?
Well, I didn't grow so many. And I got to where I worked in them, and got to where I could get something to do at it and paid something. My Lord, it must have packed for them. When I first started, $1.50 a cost. You pick them for about that price, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, my. Planted a big piece of new ground for Jack Richardson for 75 cents a day. He gave it to me on a contract.
Yeah.
I made a good job of it, and he saw the way I started, I was going to make a good job. He saw I wasn't going to make nothing, so finally he told me, said, Mr. Ford, he bluffed me. Said, you go ahead and make a good job of it. Said, I see you don't lose nothing, Chubb. And I got two, I got 75 cents a day. That's what I really received out of it. Planting tomatoes and... That's what I really received out of it. Planting tomatoes and like it is now, and beans. It just got so dry, I didn't make a one. And the rain started. And I made beans and tomatoes, and chips, and over the steak. And got pretty good money. Tomatoes sold $3 a box in Lakeland. Just late.
Oh.
The man W.G. Reddick in Lakeland. I just happened to be in touch with him, knew him. Straight honest man that ever lived. Tomatoes wasn't extra fine either. On the express out there, got bought $18 worth of beans of these boys. Give him a check for it, brought it here, and Mott cashed it, and I mean, took it, and lost it. It was turned down or something or other. And he lost the check, and I never could collect that. The man told me if I get the check, he'd pay it, but I never did. But I was working that shares with Richardson. So $5.18 was $36 worth of hard labor and everything I put out. Oh, Mr. I've lost plenty. That's been what I lost, I've been on easy street. Long way.
I didn't know Mr. Patterson ever had a horse.
Oh, yes, he tried to raise hogs, cattle and feed.
Where was he living then?
He lived, let me see. About the same place, I believe.
Up there where he is, that big house?
Now. You can follow the sign. I can't recall just where else he did live. I've been here in Nicanoka a short time.
It'd be nice to go up there and talk to Mr. Patterson sometime.
Yes, sir. Clever folks. You don't find nice, clever folks, Mr. Patterson.
If you didn't have to go down to the doctor, we could run over there right now. I got a little time off.
Well, you know,
I'll catch you again someday, and we'll run over there and talk to him.
I'd beat the beater. Anyhow, I'd take a chance of anything on God's loose. If you're ready, let's go.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Moore.
If I don't live but this one day out, I won't be lost much for going.
That's right.
Now, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got that place of sale of mines and much. Name is not just right. How you spell yours?
M-I-L-E-S.
M-I-L-E-S. Miles. But you know, I can't help in my old days, but and conversation when it happens to hit just right, it's to go to the great man. He says, he that's the greatest on earth shall be the least in heaven.
Yeah.
He that's the least on earth shall be the greatest in heaven, and he that's greatest on earth shall be the least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Army.
Yes, sir.
Well, see, every one of us signs to be great. He says you mustn't boast about your wealth. You mustn't boast about your wisdom. And all such as that. Now, I don't know, but I guess you call them commandments, don't you?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, that's hard to, you know, that's the sort of thing a fellow would never think of, you know. You see all these people that are well off and everything. You think, well, they're going to be the head man wherever they go.
There's something over 600 of them, every time you read the scripture, and I don't know if there's a whole lot more that don't sound much like a strict commandment, but it is. There's nothing so small that Christ doesn't notice. You know, he says he knows every sparrow on earth.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we think these small things, we shouldn't abide by it.
Yeah.
We should just ignore it.
Yeah.
You don't belong to do it. You're losing out when you're doing that.
That's right. I'm just turning up here. When I'm passing, I just want to hand. I've got some feed in here, Mr. Boy.
It doesn't make a great difference to me. Where you go?
I just want to get rid of this feed. I got these five little bulls out here. People pass by here in the morning.
Yeah. David said that a time or two, the best thing on God's globe.
Is that right? Yes, well, I never thought of that.
Yes, sir. Keeps flies away and everything. Healing. On contact. Takes the fever out. All of that.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. You know, I'm a veterinarian if you didn't know it. My son, Thomas, you had any experience?
I know him, yeah.
Well, he learned it from me.
Yeah.
He does quite a lot of veterinary work. My father was a veterinarian, self-made veterinarian, so I learned from him, and that's what I am. If I'm going to alter a calf, I do it different, maybe a lot of people. And he said he's planted a calf.
Now, Brother Rob. And Mr. Johnson, how are you?
Yeah, come over. Look at that bag. On the side. Take the kernels out of it.
Mm-hmm.
See here? Mm-hmm. It's on the side. It rubs in here against his thighs, you might call it.
Mm-hmm.
Water. And this way, split it in the back. Take them out. Or front either, where it doesn't rub.
Mm-hmm.
Take it out. You wouldn't think so, but the more the string you get, the better off you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's unnatural body has to rot out.
Yeah.
You kind of scrape it a little with your knife sometimes and pull it, and get the way it runs out almost to nothing and clip it off. And if the least bit left doesn't make so much difference, but if you leave too much of that, there's swell and fever. And I have a pan with some pool rock water in it. And you know, one animal's blood is poisonous to another. Whether you knew it or not,
no.
But it is. It seems like it's like it's poisonous. And as long as you wrench your knife off in your hand, you're gonna put them on the animal. Wrench them in that water. On every operation, get another one. Be sure you wash your hands and your knife before you operate on the next one. And you can have a little medicine dropper, something like that, and you can take it through here and just stick it in there and squirt it in there. I drop it for that water, and it's pretty strong, and it hardly swells. Keeps flies off and everything. And you just get well so quick.
Well, you know, I'm glad to know that.
I operated on some of that for Mr. Gather, you know, he's a man that's kind of, I don't know, goofy about something like that. It didn't hardly swell.
I let my boys, I didn't let them. They went down at the chin one day and grabbed the yelling and altered it. And they were particular about what they'd done, and that yelling liked to die before I caught up with it. The old man, he just swelled and he couldn't hardly walk. Me out on it, done closed all up and fevered the yelling. Made him catch it, and he done quit eating. They didn't know what to do, but I got a hold of something and pumped Clorox water in there. Made it go on up, you know, far enough to stay that deep in there, that bag. And shock. It wasn't 3 hours before that yelling was up. One of them died of business in the evening, and he had to eat hard in a day. Just think how quick it is.
Just got relief right off.
Yes, sir. Took all the fever out. About as quick as anything you could use. Well, I'll tell you something else. These people are cranky about alcohol. Sure, good, the strong vinegar is the best thing, as good as any alcohol you ever rubbed on you. Better. Take out swelling or soreness. My wife's legs just swore out of fright, you know, there on the bed. My Jesus, please. Better. Take out swelling or soreness. My wife's legs just swore out of fright, you know, there on the bed. My Jesus, please. They didn't know what to do. Nobody. And then, wanting to rub, I said, no, I said, just bathe it with vinegar. Taking several bathings, but wasn't long before her legs had gone back to normal. And they didn't know, they looked like they couldn't control it, no way. Nurses was consulting the doctor about it. I don't know what he told them to do, but I told them that. And they could put a bandage, you know, to hold it there, keep from drying out too quick. Dampen the bandage.
Yeah.
So when they got to doing that, why, pretty stubborn, but it sure did bring it all out.
Was that at home or in the hospital?
Right there at home.
Right at home.
Right there at home. You know, they gave her up when they sent her home. Told them what to do. Anybody never did tell her the trouble, but she knew.
Mr.
She didn't confess it, but she knew.
Yeah. Mr. Boyd, I'll tell you somebody who's good at remedies. That Ms. Patterson. Yeah. Once she learns the remedy, she's singing like she never forgets it.
Well, that's the way to do it.
And I've been over there a lot of times, and you know, they know some, done so many things. You know, I'd ask her about remedies, you know, cattle or you know, foot or something like that, and she'd just come right up with one every time. Let's go on.
All right. I'm down on a little log this morning.
Yeah.
Which old and user. You have your seat, huh? Trying to get down here and maybe have a few words with you. Let's see how the folks on the other side
of the she's getting along fairly well, I guess.
Looks like you are too.
I guess there's something happened to me Monday morning that I never had the headache. But very little. I woke up with a pain up there. It was right up in there in my eye, and a pain, and it was bad.
I hope it wasn't like mine yesterday morning.
Well, I don't know. It felt pretty bad, and then yesterday morning, it was that way.
Same thing
but
this morning?
This morning, no. I haven't felt it this morning. I felt it last night.
With the pain over your eye?
Yes, right up there.
Over your temple?
Yeah, it doesn't stay there all the time. Today you couldn't stand it, but it was just a dull headache, you know, till every once in a while those pains would go through it. You have a headache?
Well, I don't think to have a headache. It doesn't seem like it. I'm bothered with sinus trouble about as bad a case as anybody ever had. And it makes my head feel shook, kind of like I had a bad cool. Sometimes much worse than others. But my trouble jumped on me last October. They just have a, like a drunk man or something, they just have a blacking out spell that comes just like that. And I go to the floor. It's just as quick as that. And I have to be awful careful, and it strikes me, it makes me feel just like, oh, if you're going to fag out. And it doesn't last but just a moment or two. And you do, you can be taking from feeling perfectly all right. And it wasn't going to last for just a few minutes. And it's all over, and you go on feel. Yesterday morning, I had about as bad a severe spell as I've had. And I think I got up on my feet before and lay back down on the bed a moment or two. And it took me just as I laid down on the bed. And oh, man, looked like I was going to, I don't know, I was going to go through the bed or off of it somewhere and didn't know where. It's like I was going crazy as a dead bug or something or other. I was going to go out of this world, and it lasted that way any time, but it's off, maybe not as quick as you could pop your finger almost. And I got on up. Kind of staggered a little bit. Went on about my business, felt fine all day long.
Let me tell you what he said about you. What is that? Go ahead, Mr. White.
Excuse me. And so this morning, it wasn't so severe, but it just held on. I feel kind of sick at the stomach. I feel weak. And I feel like kind of giddy-headed or something or other. Like I want to stagger and fall. And I said, well, it must be my time to start. Do something. So I set out to go to the doctor.
He's on his way to the doctor when I saw him. He said, you want me to tell him, Mr. Warren?
Yes. Go right ahead and tell him.
He said you had some Poland China hogs, purebred, and give him a meal.
I lost it by being in a bean business, up to my eyes, and couldn't care for my hogs. And you know, when you had as many beans as I used to grow, when bean season comes on, you'd hardly have time to eat. So you're not having to buy anything else.
Well,
I lost the hog.
What was you doing with Poland China?
I don't know. I just. There was a fella out there from Wake Forest that had some, and they were pretty little things. I guess they were about that high, and I was out there one day, and I told him, I said, I want two of them pigs. He said, no, I said, you don't want two of those pigs. He said, you just want one of them, and said, then you want one from somewhere else, he told me. I said, well, maybe you know better about what I want than I know myself. He said, yes. Said, I'll swap this fella. One of my pigs for a male pig. And said, then you have a pair that you can raise from.
That's right.
I asked him, I said, them there pigs was about 3-4 weeks old.
You're
a pretty dog. How much those pigs weigh? He said $50 a piece. And I told him, I said, how long before I get them? He said, well, see, it should be about 6-7 weeks before you take them. And he said, I'll take them away from the hog and said, I'll take care of them for a week for you without no mother. And see if they're all right. All right. And I give him a check for $100 now for two pigs. And them little sucking pigs. I don't know, I just wanted them. And I went, I carried them home, and I raised quite a few. And most of the time I gave away. I never stole none of them that I know of.
So Beverly gave me one.
I never did sell any of them. There's a fellow Bryce in Jacksonville. He bought two of them, but he never paid them at all. So that was the same thing as he ever done. And but I give several of these people around here one of them. But they were beautiful things, and I give some old nigger that mother, she weighed 540 pounds. And I gave it to some old nigga. I don't know who he was now. I got the veterinary out here, and he said that she didn't have mineral, that she hadn't had the mineral that she thought I had. Get down, she couldn't hardly get up. And he said that I'd have to give her a shot of this stuff in the shoulder anyway. He said, just stick it in there and put them up. And I didn't have time to do it. I didn't even stay here. I lived in Jacksonville. They come down there, four red big niggas to get the hole. But I made a runway up on me. Thank you.
You mean they gonna pick her up?
That's what they said, but I couldn't have they cared all. I guess about 2-4 months after that, I asked somebody how this nigga was getting along with the hog, and she said she died. So I threw it.
What happened to yours, Mr. My hog? Well, as I told you, I was busy getting beans, and I let my hog get to the others, and they just covered it. Too much territory for that hog.
He wasn't used to that country.
He wasn't used to it and should not have been with him. They caused me to lose mine. I had hogs scattered around. They'd just go anywhere over the woods they wanted to go, down on them, everywhere. And I ought to have the hog in somewhere near the house where I could see him every day and take care of him. Everybody did it to survive.
I didn't
ask you that, huh? Sir?
You didn't lose many animals, though, out there in the swamp.
No, not to me.
Cows?
Well, yes, I lost one, I think.
You ever have one sink in and couldn't get out?
Yeah. I tell you what, just come down to the grass patch, and I lost somewhere about 40-yard head of cattle. In my cattle business, I lost 100 head of hogs in 30 days. But on the range, it's called intestinal septicemia. Wasn't cholera. And that's something hard to do anything with. And so about cows miring up, getting them bogged up. I had all the experience that I wanted that. And it was a hard matter. But they were very weak. They could hold it. Cows chew your animal on an average. Do you ever get involved anywhere where you got to pick him up? If you haven't got him mighty awful, tame in general.
Yeah.
Get him out before he stays there too long. He is so. You know what so means?
No.
He just seems to get mad and give up. He just give completely up. You got to pick him up for main fences.
And if you get them out of a bog, you take them home and take hold of them. You don't mind weak in your longer hip and get up, try to raise him up. He'll soar and he don't try to hit himself one part along garden blue.
Yeah.
Take him up the main stem. I had a meal over there as long as Mr. Keeler, and he was 78 Hereford, 1,400 pounds. I'd run it by myself. I'd win and set meal up. And he had kink eye. He was completely blind. Just looked like somebody shot him in the eye of a little bird shot when I found him. I doctored him and had him coming back. He was going to regain his sight. But he had a powder. I'd take a grass tube and stick it in it and put it in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
He got that fluid in his eye. He soon got used to that, and I mean the proposition to get it in his eye. And but I even stuck to him so close till I had him on the mend.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, had him installed and feed him cottonseed meal. He'd bring cottonseed meal. The mosquito had cottonseed meal, was gonna burn that bull up. He won't live on it. Oh, just go ahead and give it to him, Mr. Boyd. I don't know where it's supposed to be looking up. And I gave it to him. And I was leaving there one morning before daylight, going to South Florida, way down in the Mississippi. And the bull happened to be dead in the stall when I left.
You don't mean you're just living on cottonseed meal?
That's what he was doing. That's what he was doing. I didn't give him something else. Doing this way, he had plenty of cottonseed meal just feeding to him. So he would burn him up.
Mm.
He would do it. He lost.
That's a mouth of cottonseed meal would be much sweeter than in other words, that much of it for
I never thought about just feeding an animal on cottonseed meal. It costs so much for it.
Well, it makes them drink entirely too much water, for one thing.
Yeah.
Just like you take an old mule, a horse that you would. The average person is feeding a horse or a mule or something like that forage. They give it its grain, so mind they'll kind of measure that to it. You go to give him hay, just give him all he'll eat and leave some.
That's what I do, yeah.
And you're doing the worst thing you could do. You're doing the worst thing you could do. I went to a man's place down in the box some peanut hay, a little reddit down there, and he had went and had a bunch of old mules there, and he knocked off his gable in, keep having trouble feeding them, a plank or two for them to get in and just hit the fields for peanut hay. And then he must have knocked off several more plank, and they got ready to go to the top and go on over.
Mm.
And they eat hay till they talk about stomachs.
Yeah.
And that mule had the biggest stomach and so sluggish.
Yeah.
Oh my. Don't feed them any more than they eat up first and clean, and be careful.
Yeah.
You know what it takes? What makes the trouble? It takes a lot of water to wet a bale of hay.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
And if you let him eat hay as long as he needs it, he's kind of starved out and hungry. And he goes and drinks water by then, he's like he's grown up and doing
something. Well, now you think anybody would think of that, something
he's
like that.
He's not fit to work. He's sluggish. He's got more in him than he can tote himself. And it's nonsense.
Well, now when they talk about a hay belly, I'll know what they're talking about.
It's nonsense to give it to us.
From now on.
If you got a milk cow, you ought not feed it of such weight. You have all stomach correct, there ain't no beef.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just handing it to you just like I know it.
Yeah.
And you can believe it, or you can... Yeah, let's go by. But take him to a plow or a wagon or anything he can do. Or you got to put the hook gun to get anything out of it. And all he just got an overwhelming stomach.
Yeah. He's just not energetic. He got too much stomach to carry around.
You see, a mule, horse, I guess requires about 1/20 of his weight in concentrate a day. And then a tenth of it would be too much of wheat, that much of grain, and hay. And it'll hold up to stay fat.
You don't have any mules over there now.
No.
You haven't had any good while.
I can put feed in the hog in the trough until he's breaking his own self and ruining his profit.
Well, now, I figured, Mr. Boyd, I'm not much fun. I figured if a hog, you just put feed out there where they can get it. Go ahead and let them eat.
Just let them eat all they want. Waste all they want.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, let me convince you about it. My father had an old, looked like just an odd one in a same litter of pigs. Kind of an old long, yes, I don't know what he took back to ask his grandfather or something or other. And he was long-bodied and lanky. And he finally thought he was so long and tall till he didn't hardly ask a fence any odd. He just jumped fences and started on the low places first. And finally got so perfect that he jumped the highest place. And he got mad with him. He put him in a pen. You know, Mr. Bassett knows it. About these old rail fences in Georgia.
Yeah.
Old fence rails. Built a fence rail fence and fixed it so couldn't get out and curved it over on top where he couldn't climb over. He'd just climb it like a dog. Mm. He got mad with it. And he had to go right, build it right close to the barn, not too far from the barn, and on the way to the new lot. And he go by that pen, he said he just made it in his mind. Said, I haven't got a great deal of corn. I'm going to try him on 1 ear of corn a day. If he dies, it's all right with me. He can't live on 1 ear of corn a day. Let's try the ear of corn. Said he can die. Give him plenty of water. He go by there and he'd feed him. He would throw that, all that 1 ear of corn. The first 30 days, it looked like he'd starve to death, but he'd leave it. After 30 days, he commenced to mend. Way over in the winter time, when he butchered that hog, why, he was the best hog he had. I think he weighed something like 300 pounds. Had a big old hole under his nose where he hung him on the gallows to butcher him. He was so long.
Hmm.
Just as healthy as he could be. And he mended, and he made a tremendous nice hog.
Did he ever increase his feed?
Never did.
Never did. Just give my money.
When he butchered him, see here, his stomach had done drawn down so it wasn't much larger than that. Smallest stomach the man was in the hog ever looked at. He lived on it and got fat on it, as fat as he could be. And now you wouldn't think it'd be reasonable. But that's a funny way to punish him, but I didn't much blame him. He just turned him out there. He was more trouble than he was worth.
I don't know how you'd fix one of old rail fences.
And you had to let him stay there, you know. There was nothing else to do with him. He wasn't fit to kill and put him in there and butcher him. So
you know how to put up a rail fence.
If they're going over a rail fence, I don't know how they'd fix a rail fence or anything on it that would hold them in.
Why, you can weed it down, tie it down, or something like that, the way they can't go out the top. He'd climb it like a dog.
Right in there, put several rail down, up there, and put it this way, and one that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of people do that.
Sticking riders, you call it.
Why? Call it what, Mr. Boyd?
Call it sticking riders. Do like this, then put one in the fork.
Yeah. Well, that didn't keep him.
As high as you want it.
Yeah. That'd keep him from knocking it off. But it wouldn't keep him from going over it.
Yeah, you'd best read the cover so he can't go out and fasten the top down on it. And he got in place after so long a time. I don't mean he does, but he was a young man. He was young.
Well, I'll tell you a story that my daddy told me. He was working for a man of God. Whatever you feed him, he would say you feed him on that. And says you give him a bucket of water a day for the first week. And he says the next week, says you give him two buckets of water. The third week, give one and don't ever give him any more water.
Don't ever give him any more water.
No. After 3 weeks now, he didn't give him any more water. He gave him a bucket a day for the first week, two buckets the next week. And the third week, one bucket don't give him no more water.
That's exactly correct.
And he said he kept the steer in the pen. He said, yeah, I don't know. Kept him in there for some time. But see, he was such a foolish kid that they decided they wouldn't get him made sometime. And said they would be good. And I imagine it took some time to battle this year. At least 3 months, I'd say. At least 3 months. It would always take me 3 months to battle. You don't think Clown need water when he's fat?
No, sir. If you can give him the right kind of food, you can fatten him out and say, go in the well and get him a drop of water. That fast.
Ha, ha, ha. I never heard nobody that ever agreed with that except him. I never have.
Well, he knew what you were going to say right there when you
right,
started.
Right then, but now, my daddy told that a lot of times, but actually, I didn't feel anything like that, but I would have thought that the water would have been better for it.
Now, you mix in sweet potatoes and rutabaga turnips and top. And turnip roots and tops, and such stuff as that. And don't give him a drop of water. He'll fatten his head up on him less than 2/3 of the time, I'll say. Give it a plenty. Did he will? If you pull any kind of feed and all kinds of fattening feeds to him, and give him all the water he'll drink. He just loosens his bowel rest and he won't fatten.
Yeah.
And just enough of that other green forage, stuff like that, mixed in with your green, your fattening food, why, it just sends him right on off. And in 3 weeks, he'll be a different looking cow. You take a sheep, put him in what we call, in the Georgia, we call a crowfoot patch of grass.
You don't eat full 12, do you? You don't eat full 12.
Oh, real, real. Excuse me,
go ahead,
Richard.
I've just run out of
tape. Well, that's right. Some people sympathize with him, so they won't stick to it. I get sorry for that old steer there, that thing sometimes. He just stand there and I give him half a bucket of water, about a little better than a gallon of water a day. Start with. And you reduce it if you want to. It's supplement. Try to get some more, but that green stuff was answering the purpose of what he wanted, to the dry stuff to be the heat. And if you got that and give him something like that, why, it takes the water completely away from you. It's that fast.
Now that's over there on your place where you are now.
No, that was in Georgia. That was the South of Georgia, where I'm born and raised.
Well, when did you come down here, Mr. Boyd? I thought you...
I was 21 years on the 4th day of February to put the foot on the ground, making over on the 7th day.
Yeah.
And now I'm 81 years and 3 months old.
You're not as old, Miss Anna.
How that?
You're not as old, Miss Anna.
Yes.
She's way ahead of you.
What's your age, you know?
95.
Yes,
sir. And I was over there.
I have to differ with you in a way. I don't mean to teach you word either. I guess as old as any man you see around here that's 90. Yeah, I'll be a good word.
Yeah.
If anything in the world will carry you back, I have enough to take you back. Take you for a ride.
No, I think you're in good
shape. Too many men stood around me and stand and say, I don't see how any more you could do it. I know Mr. Patterson can't always sanction that. Plenty of them. I worked them down to the barrel on the guitar. Keep right on going.
I declare he gave his work and all of his children.
That's why.
They should have. They are all. They know how.
I thought it was the best gift I could give them is to run them how to work. And every one of them knows how to get down and get it. It can work. They can do most anything that comes to hand, and so can I. Listen, I'd venture to say that I never tackled nothing in this world in my life. There's some things I know better than to tackle. But I know nothing about no water, no. That's some machinery and things of that kind of thing. But I never tackled no job. Never let it quit. Get hold of it.
Well, what's some of the hardest jobs you've done, Mr. Boyd?
Oh, I don't know if I can get hardest to call it out.
Would you call packing melons hard?
I can tell you the hardest job I ever done. To take them, a hare or something, and get in the field where there's a dead throw up a balk in the middle and try to run out a balk that wide. And walk on it, walk behind that thing all day long, and dump it, so on and so forth, to break out a bulk in the middle of a row of crop, something other like that, and it's hard. I get so tired in my feet and legs, you know, my feet are too small, I got four on the stand. And I get tired.
Mm-hmm.
It danced me out worse than anything I ever done.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of work falling, walking, because I plow, walking in soft dirt.
Yeah.
When I'm siding beams, why, these low-fall shoes like the sheriff, why, my shoes would be full of dirt all day long.
Yeah.
I'd be bogging. If I couldn't bog my heel, I've done it many times, I'd step behind a man and plowing for me. Do like that with the heel of my shoe if I couldn't sink my heel of my shoe in the ground. He wasn't plowing the soup.
Mm-hmm.
Subsoil in the ground where the roots could grow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's tiresome wood. You walk behind a flower and you plow that way, you'll be tired when night comes. You won't need no rocking, you'll be asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But, boys, what do you think about the way people raise corn now and don't fly it? People up in Georgia, where we come from up there, they plant the corn and they don't wake it. They don't wake it. They just put something on to kill the weeds and they don't fly cotton or corn. But about once, and that's to put more fertilizer around it. They don't.
They make it on fertilizer. I hear them talking every morning before daylight at my house now about how they're making that. It's nitrogen and potash. And it's liquid form of it and all of that. They pour the fertilizer to it and make it. They make it more than we used to make.
And my grandfather. granddaddy was he 55 years fine. And used to be considered a good farmer. And he planted corn in 6 foot rows. And when he'd have me to drop the corn, a little kid, I'd drop one every other stick.
And you hit the nail on the head. You explained to me when you said 6 foot rows. I know what you mean. I know how come that's largely responsible for making it. It plowed to what you call a waterfall. Put your corn down in there.
Yeah.
And you can take a riding cultivator with two mules to it and keep the dirt going to that corn. And you plow every other middle, one this week and one next week, run a cultivator through it and take two mules and cultivate 60 acres. And you won't have to work hard to cultivate 60 acres in corn. Plowing every other middle, just run through one time through every other middle of it. Next week, the other middle.
Yeah,
and keep it growing.
That's the way my granddaddy did it.
Mm-hmm. And next,
now, that's when you had a 6 foot row.
Yeah, you made
And don't crowd it on the drill too much either.
15 to 25 bushels.
I gather 40 bushels a day without a spoonful of fertilizer. Not a spoonful, a tablespoonful.
Well, one time in my life, I seen two brothers down the lower part of Woods County. I had 6 pounds of fertilizer with a tablespoon. It was my man Jack Sutton, Dorn. They were putting out fertilizer with a in corn.
You can take the stalk of corn if you just could dig it up or put it up out of the ground and give it a thorough examination. It ought to be an education to you how to grow corn. Every joint is under the ground has roots to it, doesn't it? Puts out a ring of roots all the way around.
Yeah.
All the way around the stalk, proper roots. Dirt it up till you lay it by in it. It puts out some there, they used to call them brace roots, you know. It comes out above the ground. Rainy season comes and the corn's tossing. They put out, you know, and go down and go in the ground. The braces look like it works good to call them. And all right to call them brace roots because they brace the stalk of them. But they feed to the corn too at the time when they need it. Well, that way of cultivating and continuously carrying dirt to the corn keeps new roots coming out. So the hot sun don't get down in the soil enough to dry them back. Well, there's main roots, and then there's what you call hair that comes on, I call them hair, goes on that main root that goes out yon and hunts moisture. And these here hair roots hunts plant seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Comes all the way on that main root. But now if you break that main root, you're cutting your yield of corn. You cut them hair roots off, and they'll come back. And if you trim them off a little on the top side, there's some under the bottom, and all the way out. But if you get up close to your corn and cut it off, you just about as well say it's almost like a man's main artery in his arm. You're cutting his crop. People don't know any better than that.
But yours,
up there a few weeks ago in Georgia,
we used to plow right close to the corn.
Boy, they planting that corn up there now. and 2 foot rolls. And they cultivating, planting.
And like sorghum.
Three rows of it at the time.
Putting it in thick as sorghum.
Really have improved thick as sorghum. Have improved seed corn too, Mr. Patterson. You got that Dixie 18, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that little old corn you used to call Hastings Felicity.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a very large ear, but make a half a dozen ears of corn to a stalk.
Yeah, I planted.
My father planted an acre and got 10 cents a stalk. Every stalk in the field and kept a book on it. 10 cents for every stalk in the book in the field. And didn't get no big prize for the corn. And I planted an acre for a trial. He said, mine be his. And I got 10 cents a stalk for every stalk that was in my tax. And I mean, I didn't have any trouble selling it either. There's a man run a store in Dallas, the name of Will Hughes. I planted mine late, make it come in late, and all the roots near corn was gone. And so I hid it. And I went, had a old Ford truck. And I went in there and first gathering, I don't remember how many dozen I had, pretty good batch of it. I drove up to McHugh's store. I says, I've got some corn, Mr. Hughes. You know, father traded there, really, for years. I says, I'm going to say some roast near corn. I said, wait just a minute. Just stop there and look. Yeah. I said, how much you got on, man? I says, I think I have 50 dozen. He says, give it all to me. I went to unload it. And he put two or three men out there with each turn of paper bags. And I got the corn off the truck. They had done sold it. They done bagged it up. Every person looked like they walked the sidewalk. On a dozen two of that corn. So I'm going to take two or three dozen. And it was gone. Next morning I went back, I had 100 dozen. He said, give me all you got. And it's just that way for the last air wind. Taking the whole load, see what it was.
It makes a lot of corn. But I made...
Now is that the same corn he's talking about?
Yeah, same corn that I planted 4 acres of and then. But McClellan told him, says it don't last, says it. He saw, says it usually does. So he gets to be headed to the... and all, I never got nothing out of it. Didn't want nothing for that concern. I just wanted to plant it. But it made a lot of corn. I planted it, I imagine, about 6 inches of corn.
Was that down here?
No.
As up there?
Sure. And I planted it in a old corner. That old tail was just in, I imagine, 15, 20 years. And it broke it up and planted corn, but it said it made corn. It was 6-7 years of corn, there was salt of it. But I wouldn't begin to say how much fertilizer I put on it. I imagine I put just as much as it. You have to strip it was put down to start with. I just opened it up and put all it had put down. And I fertilized it again twice. After that, and I imagine I had 1,500 pounds of fertilizer down there. And I put that much on that cotton the next year I planted. But I believe that every hole had been picked and a crack been
got all the cotton that was over that 4 acres, they would have been 50 pounds of lint cotton on that land. They were putting stalks. There were some stalks in there as big as that pole over there. And you could ride a horse through it, you couldn't see it. I never seen such thing, but it sure didn't make no cotton. There's no bones come on it, and none of them ever got bigger than the end of your thumb, and they just cranked.
But the everlasting made the seed, didn't it?
Made what?
Made cotton seed?
No, I never picked it.
Never did?
Never picked it on nothing, and if I'd have picked it, I wouldn't have had 6 pounds of cotton seed and all.
Well, I didn't quite get through. I'd like to explain that to you now, as long as I'm on as far as I have.
Yeah.
That is what you call Hastings prolific corn. And it was prolific. It just, that was the nature of it, to make from three to a half a dozen ears to the stalk. But it wasn't no size. And it had a little old cob in it. It wasn't much larger than this stick.
Yeah.
Now, that's very much against roasting your corn. You could break it in the morning, as you don't mind, wouldn't do to shuck it. If it did, it'd be swiveled on the cob before noon. Cob's too small, it doesn't hold enough moisture. And I just happened to strike that time. There wasn't no corn, roasting your corn. I sold it. But now, if you're going to buy a corn that makes good roasting ears or makes good corn, you want, I heard people who didn't know any better, ain't nothing but cob, too much cob. You want a corn and a great big cob, the less cob you have, the better I like it. But it takes a lot of corn to cover a big cob, brother. And if you want to make corn, you got to have a big cob. Little cob. You know, way back then,
is that right?
They'd go plumb crazy about the little cob corn. He used to have old corn called little cob corn. I heard old gray-headed men talk about, I want the little cob corn. Got any seed corn? Got any of that little cob corn? I wouldn't have it.
I want a melon with a thin rind. That's just being, save money.
That's not so true. About a thin rind.
Did you have to have a pretty hard corn up there to stand up against the weevil?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever had much trouble with weevils up a little farther there.
No, that's an old day.
You have a dry spell, you got that haste of prolific corn. A few days of dry spell, you know, it just slow it down where it wouldn't make the corn it ought to make. It wouldn't fill out. You know, that kind of little old cob would dry out for a week's dry weather like it is now. Stalk and cob and all, you know, wouldn't have enough moisture in it to produce corn.
Well, what was the chief corn you liked?
Well, my father had what you call Indian flint corn. He kept the seed as long as he lived, and I brought several bushels of it down here and sold Mr. Wood a bushel of it. I don't know who and all. And, I was hoping they'd get it started and would keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Made more corn, less fertilizer than any corn I ever planted in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind that the other 40 bushels of acres on natural dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I had a spoonful of fertilizer maybe for years.
Indian flint,
hardest, best, most weevil-proof corn you can plant.
Big ear,
great big ear. You give a mule 10 ears of corn 3 times a day. I want to tell you, he could plow and wouldn't starve to death either.
Mm.
30 ears of corn. 25 ears would shell a pig, struck with a stick and weighted wheat. Supposed to come up with the weight.
He gets killed. The weight he puts the corn in there.
Yeah.
And,
How you?
That's the way I judge anything of that kind. I learned to do that. Way back on. My father taught it to me. He'd take a stalk of corn, stick up a stick by it, and he'd cultivate one row one way and another row another way, and he'd dig down there and find the roots of the corn and break one or two of them and let the sticks stay there till gathering time come and see the difference. That's the way you educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It does a whole lot better than getting your farm magazine and reading it. You know, Professor Massey, the oldest farmer that ever made $1 million in the state of Georgia, he'd read Professor Massey's agricultural papers, but he didn't read nobody else's. He learned to farm a whole lot by reading Professor Massey's that made $1 million farming.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the next man? Just nothing but farming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a man like that's worth listening to. He could write about corn and anything else you have. Like crops, you know, peanuts, a whole lot of different things. And you'll see these little knots that come on roots of peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
What does it represent? Ammonia. That's what you call legumes. Little knots all up and down the roots on peanuts and other crops too. That's ammonia. Ammonia is what makes that. It takes in ammonia. Out of the earth and out of the air. You know, people fuss about planting in the moon and by the moon and all sorts of that. Now, I guess they have a crop in the moon pretty soon. And so, they don't know what they're talking about. You take a pea, you take a few peas out there, lady fingers or whatever, they might be black eyes. The time that those peas start to barren, blooming and barren, it should be dark night. Because insects is a whole lot worse in moonlight nights than they are in dark nights. And there's a whole lot of ammonia in the air in dark nights than there is in moonlight nights. I guess you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And crops take in ammonia out of the ground.
Yeah.
Well, I pulled a story down here with Wilshire Walker from Watermelon. Never heard no man ever say anything about it, never knew to notice it.
What was that?
He had a patch of corn on the south side of a watermelon patch. And the corn was in full tossing. And become a wind, heavy wind, blew all that pollen off of that corn right over his watermelon field. And the watermelons were blooming and setting watermelons, and a lot of them was ripped good size. But the watermelon takes in moisture, anything as quick as anything you ever saw, because it grows rapid. And it put that pollen all over that watermelon field from that corn field. You cut them watermelons after we had a rain there, and they get roots cut and that pollen out of the ground, off of the ground, whatever you want to call it. And you could smell the corn pollen in it.
Mm.
Taste it all, but
mm.
I told them about it. Them old growers down there. And they went to White Hart. Just had to quit picking. Wait about 4 or 5 days for the melons to get ripe.
Mm.
Made them white hearts. You know, be a white streak in the center of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know where I convinced them or not, but I was thoroughly convinced myself that that's the boy.
Mm-hmm. I know him, Wilshire Walker.
Who?
Wilshire Walker.
Sure. He kept on. I started doing him before he started planting water on him. He kept on, but I reckon he got rich. $65,000 and a half. Yeah.